Among the great joys of being a cinephile is the excitement of discovering films and artists which were previously unknown to you. A new Blu-ray box set ranks among the most important releases of 2013 and brings to new shores one of Japan's most popular and enduring heroes, the blind swordsman Zatoichi. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. The Criterion Collection has released a massive 25-film box set titled Zatoichi, the Blind Swordsman, to much fanfare, and I'm delighted to have the box set's producer, Curtis Choi, on the program today. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule. This large box fell on my desk, and I was so excited. I had come across the very first film in this series back in the 90s in New York in a video store, and before that, had no idea of this character. Who was Zatoichi?
Well, to go to Zatoichi himself, there was originally a short story by a writer named Shimazawa Khan, and he ended up writing about real-life Yakuza. He was researching Yakuza battle and turf war, and he found out that one of the Yakuza was, in fact, blind. And from that historical fact, he ended up creating his own impression of what that person would be, and that was Zatoichi. And from there, he basically became this film figure when star Shintaro Katsu, who had been doing work over at Daiyu Studios, the studio ended up thinking that it was potentially a project for him because he had played a kind of blind anti-hero in another movie called Agent Shiranui a couple of years before. And when they were looking for a star for this, he figured he could end up doing it. And once the first tale of Zatoichi was made, the role was basically his.
So that was 1962 when the first film came out. The short story, I gather, was from the 40s, and you've beautifully translated it in the liner notes for this box set that's
right.
That's out now. But 1962, they make this film about a masseur.
Right.
Who travels from village to village giving massages, but just happens to be one of the greatest swordsmen. Which seems preposterous, but the performance at the heart of this, Shintaro Katsu's performance as Ichi, who, and we should mention this actor, played him in all of the films in this box set, 25 films in all, takes it from being preposterous to utterly believable.
Yeah, I think a lot of that credibility goes into his performance. I mean, he is able to combine something where there's a lightning quick skill to his sword play, where you know your eyes can barely register the flashing blade, and you know it's a testimony to his physical abilities to be able to pull off moves the way he does. However, he also then ends up combining those with a very precise, calibrated slowness of somebody feeling out situations and trying to sense everything around him. And it's a very full, well-rounded performance. It's kind of remarkable. I think when I first had seen Zatoichi movies, I'd seen random entries, and I don't think I had ever truly bothered to watch all 25 because I figured, well, gosh, they're basically all the same, and in a certain way they are.
Yeah.
It's always him. He comes into a town. There's some kind of wrongdoing going on. He tends to help the downtrodden. Even though he is technically a criminal, a Yakuza, he ends up still having an honor code. He's kind of like Omar in The Wire, you know. And he, while being a criminal, will always end up standing up for somebody who needs help. And then at the end, he ends up leaving that town and going somewhere else. But ultimately, within there are little tweaks that certain filmmakers end up bringing in, or that little events allow to play out, or say the tone could end up being more comedic in one. In other ones, it could be a little bit more serious without ever going full Kurosawa, say.
Sorry, right.
I believe there's a dog barking in the back over there. But by and large, when you watch the movies, I think in sequence, there are two things that happen. One is I think you become aware of how amazing a performer Shintaro Katsu is. And number two, you really see the character go full circle in a certain way. You know, it starts at a particular point in his life in a particular town, and then by the time you get to the 25th film, he returns home and learns that nice hard lesson of you can't go home again, you know.
He ends
up basically and pariah in his own area, and the people that he loved are by and large gone, and things have changed, and it's kind of moving, really. And I think a lot of the emotional heft of the film is due to Katsu. And that character type is very, I don't know, I would say a kind of almost classic, not Japanese, but U.S. Western type. Mm. You know, if you look at, say, Elmore Leonard Western stories from
right.
the 50s, where there's a professional who seems to be easily put upon, but is in fact underestimated by everyone around him. That's, you know, that is Zatoichi. You know, he always has to prove himself by kind of slicing a fly in half or slicing dice or candles, things like that, and then everybody realizes, oh, you know, you better not mess with him.
But unlike the Westerns, where, you know, it's usually gunplay that denotes skill, this is a performance that, and I think relative to samurai film in general, at least really good samurai films, you know, requires not only great acting, but just an amazing physical prowess.
Oh, absolutely.
Physical performances of these are so far beyond anything we in the West maybe would attribute to any of our genres.
Yeah, I mean, his physical skill, and I don't think you would realize he could be as swift and agile as he is, because when you look at Shintaro Katsu, he doesn't have a traditional leading man look. He looks kind of stocky.
Pudgy, you know, at times.
Yeah, you wouldn't think that he could be as quick as he is. But again, it's in his favor, because you realize that everyone underestimates him precisely because of those details. And one thing that's interesting about Shintaro Katsu is he does come from a performer background. I mean, his father was a theater performer and very skilled in the shamisen. Shintaro Katsu himself was a shamisen performer, and you get to see him display some of that in some of the films, like number 16, Zatoichi the Outlaw. And you know, his skills there are amazing, and he kind of moved away from that to go into film. And as an aside, a lot of his tics that he incorporates in his performance are based on a shamisen teacher he had as a youth who happened to be blind. So he incorporated a lot of those details he remembered of that teacher.
I should note that these films, the 25 films we're mentioning, were all made in an 11-year period from 1962 to 1973, which I was thinking the other day, you know, really covers a fascinating time in the world, but particularly in Japan, both societal changes and changes in film making. At times, the series has its foot more rooted in a more classical samurai type film, whereas
yeah.
other times, depending on what the director for a particular film was, it becomes a little closer to the new wave of Japan. It's amazing.
I would definitely say that, and in particular, if you look at Shintaro Katsu's own effort, which is film number 24, Zatoichi and Desperation, if you compare his personal style to ones that are by the more classically trained filmmakers like Kenji Misumi, you know, Katsu's own style is much more like, say, Dennis Hopper with Easy Rider. It's very trippy and psychedelic, and it has lots of visual pyrotechnics with cameras flying all over the place and fast edits. It's a completely different feel. But even then, I think tonally, a lot of what you end up getting in the movies and thematics, you know, they're very current, contemporary to the times that the movies were made. Even if they're taking place in a kind of feudal Japan, they're very much against worker oppression. And,
right.
You know, they have very, particularly Zatoichi number 16, Zatoichi the Outlaw, I think it's got a very, very soft Marxist bent. It's a pretty fascinating movie, and it's definitely one of my favorite ones.
So is that level of contemporaneousness or just something genetic to the story and the formula what made these so popular?
I think a lot of that is what it is. It definitely spoke to an audience. And if you happen to watch this kind of amazing documentary that's included on the set, I did not make it. A man named John Nathan did. It's called The Blind Swordsman. And it was made in 78 when the star, Katsu, was making the TV series that ended up taking up where the movies left off. You really see how attuned Katsu was to what audiences would like, not just in terms of content, but how they would respond to the way certain scenes are structured or played, or what you would do in terms of a gesture or performance. He is always thinking about the audience, and I think, you know, with film number 16 onwards, he had formed his own production company, and it became clear, I think it becomes clear, that he has more creative control. He exerts more control over each subsequent movie. And they very much play into the thoughts and, you know, stresses and fears of audiences of that time in a very populist way. I don't think that they're ever heavy-handed, but they definitely address things that people would be thinking about at that time, I believe. But when all is said and done, I think the appeal of this series is Katsu. I think that his presence, his innate likability within this kind of anti-hero part is what really brought people back, because in addition to this series, he was doing multiple other films. He was doing, you know, at the beginning of this series, a good couple of other series for Daiei. So there was one called the Hoodlum Soldiers series. So there, you know, audiences were definitely getting a lot of them at that time.
It's amazing to watch him command the physical frame of the film and move through space as this blind performance. He's hyper aware of his surroundings and yet also tentative as he moves down roads and through villages and things. And it's just riveting to watch. I'm wondering, all of that detail that he has in his performance, there is copious amount of technical detail that went in, I'm sure, to producing such a massive box set and ambitious box set. How long did you work on this?
Well, I would say from beginning to end, it was a frighteningly short period of time. And in retrospect, I kind of think it was almost ludicrous. I would say it was about 5 months. Now, we had a certain amount of...
You must have put everybody on it then.
Well,
for
sure, our restoration department was working very, very hard. In a lot of these cases, we had high-definition masters that were in existence already, that we had a good handful of years before, so they were already in good shape, and we could work with those. However, with the first film, we made a new transfer, and all the Toho titles that were on this, we had to make new transfers. So those added in a little time. I would say the biggest challenge with the films was actually making sure the subtitles were consistent between all 25 films. If you look at previous releases, and this is not to knock them in any way, because I fully understand why they would be handled this way, it seems like each film was subtitled by a different person or a different company. Somebody will be referred to in one way in one film, and another one will be referred to, differently in another. There'll be different names for certain items, and it was just never really all that consistent. So the tough part here was really just going through all 25 movies, making sure that they would refer to a particular position always in this one way, and it didn't get shifted around from magistrate to superintendent to intendant to this or that. It had to be somewhat consistent.
I think you just identified what makes the Criterion Collection the Criterion Collection, the unified whole. The attention to detail really pays off, and it's an extraordinary series, beautifully presented. So I want to thank you so much, Curtis, for speaking with me today.
Oh, you're welcome.
I've been discussing the Criterion Collection's newly released 25-film box set titled Zatoichi, The Blind Swordsman, with the set's producer, Curtis Choi. The set covers the extremely popular series of films about a blind swordsman as he travels Japan, confronting and dispatching corrupt officials, gangsters, and yakuza. For more information on the Zatoichi films and the Blu-ray and DVD box set, log on to CriterionCollection.com. The Zatoichi series of films is also available for streaming on Hulu+. I'm Charles Horek. Thank you for listening to On Film.